You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show here in the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel. I'm sitting in for Maggie for this, the second hour of our afternoon broadcast. Delighted to have still with me a tremendous guest, a tremendous public servant throughout his career, both in the federal system, now in the municipal system as well. It's Mayor Dennis McBride of the city of Wauwatosa. Dennis, thanks for sticking with me for a few more moments. Dennis and I are talking about not only his experiences as a mayor of this major city in America and the state of Wisconsin, but also the fact that he is committed to paper. Much of his experience in that major year 2020, a book called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. Dennis, right before we broke, you were talking about Thomas More and the civics lesson coming out of that. And I want to just have you finish up on that thought, and then we'll move on to a couple of other things related to the First Amendment. And then we'll tell people where they can get a copy of your book if they're so inclined.
Well, the point of a man for all seasons and Moore's comment there is that the man was a saint of the Catholic Church, and even he said, I would give the devil due process. The point is, we don't prejudge people. We put them through a legal system, and it was not my job as mayor to fire a police officer. That's the job of a police and fire commission. It was my job to fulfill my oath of office, which was to uphold the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin and the United States of America and give people due process. So that's the point of that. But I try to weave in those references to literature and other things to give people a perspective.
Absolutely. You also talk in the book about First Amendment concepts and some real practical applications and, frankly, some misunderstandings, perhaps among some of your residents, about how that works in America. Give us that story. Tell us that story and the takeaway in terms of not just law school instruction, but also how we should understand our rights as Americans.
Well, I have a chapter called Time, Place, and Manner, and every person who's ever been through law school understands that concept. And the Supreme Court has interpreted the First Amendment to say it is not an absolute right. We all balance our rights against each other. So you have a right to protest, Jim. I have a right to protest. But you can protest in places at 3 p.m, but not 3 a.m. I had people coming to my house at 2 a.m. with speakers that were 6 feet high, blaring music at my house. They were driving on neighbors' lawns. One person actually at some point shot a BB through my window. Still have a hole in my window from that on my porch. That is not observing the law.
It is not.
The ACLU has guidelines that are based on Supreme Court cases. If people want to know more, they should look at that. It's available online. It's a very good statement, and I implored people in 2020 to observe those guidelines, and unfortunately, a lot of them didn't. But I warned people that if they didn't comply with the law, they were going to be arrested at times, or they're going to get ticketed at times. And they were outraged when they got ticketed or arrested, but if they were breaking the law, they were breaking the law. The First Amendment doesn't protect people who light fires in dumpsters or shoot shotguns at people's homes, which happened in Wauwatosa at one point during the protest.
As you and I have often said in the past, and we continue to say, there is no right in America that is unconditional, right? They're all premised upon the notion we live in a society of people, and we need not only to be respectful, but also thoughtful about where the limits of our rights are. And even as we express them. So appreciate that comment. Dennis, talk with us about what's next. Path forward, new equilibriums. I know you speak about that in your book as well. What's next for Wauwatosa and your leadership of it?
Well, again, I want to just point out how important Wauwatosa is. It's considered the third leading source of votes for Democrats in the state now. It's been gone through a political evolution, but at night, we're the 14th largest city in the state. During the day, we're the fourth largest city after Milwaukee, Madison, and Green Bay. We have 105,000 people working here, going to school, et cetera, et cetera. So it's an important city with a kind of a funny name. But here's what I say at the end of my book. it's the post-2020, it's easy to be pessimistic about our political system. But we've survived the Civil War, assassinations, depressions, and political scandals in the past. We forget that change takes time and hard work. Wauwatosa was a segregated community, and we've slowly returned to the roots of our abolitionist forebears who founded this city. But we have a long way to go. What I say is, to move forward, we must work together. In 1892, a Massachusetts editor wrote a pledge that people recite almost every day. He talks about a republic, for an indivisible nation of diverse states and people. He talks about liberty and justice for all. We take that oath, that pledge, almost every day. When Benjamin Franklin left Independence Hall after the Constitutional Convention was over, a neighbor said to him, "What kind of government do we have?" And he said, "A republic, if you can keep it." And that's the point. Our society is always, always a work in progress. For all of us, that requires that we not just take pledges every day, but we actually are faithful to the notion of an indivisible republic. We believe in representative government, which has been violated a lot in the last 5 years. The rule of law, similarly violated. We have to be dedicated to liberty and justice for all, but it takes more than elected officials to do that. It's, again, a team sport. We all must be involved in that. It takes teamwork. So that's my move forward. The new equilibrium, is going to be found at the city level. This is where we are closest to the people. We provide services every day to people. They can literally reach out and touch their elected officials. Those people in Washington and Madison are far away, but in Wauwatosa and Glendale and Milwaukee and West Dallas, we're all very close. You know where to find me. So if we all work together, we can start turning the ship around.
Dennis, if listeners, and I know they do, want to get a copy of your book coming out later this month, how do they go about doing that, getting a copy of A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization? Where can you go to get that?
The book will be available starting on September 30th. They can pre-order at the Indiana University Press website. If you type in IU Press McBride on Google, you'll find the book and you'll be able to order from that. It also points out that you can get the book through on the Barnes & Noble website, Books A Million. I'm told that Boswell Books and will be carrying it, so other bookstores will have it. There are multiple ways to get it, but if you're really eager to get it, you can pre-order now on the Indiana University website.
That is Dennis McBride. He is the mayor of the city of Wauwatosa. He is also an author of a book called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. Dennis, my friend, I want to thank you so very much for being with me, with Jacob, with all the listeners here on Civic Media and the Maggie Dawn Show this afternoon. We will look forward to more conversation with you in your official capacity and also as a published author on the times ahead. Thank you so much, Dennis, for being a part of our discussion this afternoon.
Jim, it's been a true honor. Thank you so much.
Take care. As we continue here on the Maggie Dawn Show, as always, we like to encourage you to be a part of our discussion, commenting on that, commenting on other issues that we have discussed. I know that Mark from Perry-Dussac, you've been on the line for a while. And Mark, glad to have you a part of our discussion this afternoon here on the Maggie Dawn Show. Mark, are you with us? All right. It sounds like Mark may not be with us anymore. Let's talk about another issue related to a federal district court judge who has, issued sort of a bookend, if you will, to the decision issued by the federal district court judge in Boston. This one on the other side of our country. And this one having to do with the presence of federal troops in Los Angeles, and in particular, decision about whether or not the president's decision to bring and order federal troops, military troops into Southern California is legal or not. This also coming out just recently by a federal district court judge. We've talked about him before here on the Maggie Dawn Show and in other broadcasts here on Civic Media. His name is Charles R. Breyer. Again, a federal district court judge. He is in San Francisco. And this decision that he has rendered just this week comes more than 2 months after, as we all know, this very contentious deployment of troops in Los Angeles in June. That has dwindled now to about 300 National Guard soldiers, but they're still there. And although that presence is still there, the issue is, what about this idea of a national police force? It has taken plainly an increased focus and attention of all of us, given the fact what's going on right now in Washington, D.C., a militarization of our domestic police force there, presence threatened in other cities, including Chicago, other places around the nation, maybe even Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We don't know exactly what the president's plan may be, but he has certainly talked about expanding what has been going on in Los Angeles and other places, including Washington, D.C., and other cities around the nation. So what do we have here? We've got federal judge Charles Breyer. Charles Breyer telling us that the president's use of troops in Los Angeles is illegal, and finding that the deployment exceeded the limits that generally prohibit the use of military force for domestic law enforcement. As we've talked so often on this, the Maggie Dawn Show, and other places, there is a dramatic difference between domestic law enforcement, the kinds of things they do, the focus of it, which is intended for safety and security. It is meant to be, obviously, a service organization. Entities around the nation in cities and villages and towns, big and small, that are representative of the community, yes, and also serving the community, their constituencies, quite literally, you and me, the people in our nation. What the judge has said here in his very important decision is that the systematic use of armed soldiers whose identity was often obscured by protective armor and military vehicles to set up protective perimeters and traffic blockades, engage in crowd control, and otherwise demonstrate a military presence in and around Los Angeles, those actions violate laws that have been in place since the late 1800s. That, again, coming off the pen of a federal district court judge in California. This, of course, the latest in a series of decisions being made about that. You may recall another judge, Frimpong, who had to instruct federal officials on the circumstances under which they can detain and arrest people. Again, encountering them in the streets, having to explain once again to law enforcement that you can't arrest people, can't detain people unless you've got a reasonable suspicion to believe that they have committed a crime. The decision just this past week, just in recent days, by Judge Breyer adds more force to that. And when we come back here in the Maggie Dawn Show, I'll tell you exactly what the judge has done in that case that has implications beyond just Los Angeles, beyond just Washington, D.C. We'll talk all about that and more here on the Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in this afternoon for this, the second hour of our broadcast, talking yet about another federal judge, this one, Judge Charles Breyer. He has written on these issues before. That is the presence of federal troops and military presence in Los Angeles, in California, issuing a major decision just this past week, finding that the president, the Trump administration, through the Secretary of Defense, illegally has used thousands of military troops in California in a ruling that has all but accused the president of turning about 5,000 Marines and National Guard soldiers into what the judge called a national police force. No small words, describing the fact that the president does not have the authority to do this, and plainly drawing the ire of the administration as well, which has promised, of course, to appeal this decision. Where does that go? That goes to the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit. They have previously overturned this judge on other matters related to the presence of military in Southern California. And the president and the Secretary of Defense, again, promising to appeal this decision. All of this, of course, a part of the Justice Department's movement, the Defense Department's movement, again, based upon the assessment by the president in terms of the need to go in, as the president replied a number of weeks ago when he was challenged about this. The president calling Judge Breyer a radical left judge, vowing to wage a federal crackdown on crime also in other cities, including Chicago, plainly not being received well in the White House, and plainly going to be the focus, again, of further litigation in the federal courts of our nation. That's the way it is supposed to work. Decision, of course, arising from the deployment this past summer, about 4,000 members of the California National Guard, 700 Marines to Los Angeles, when demonstrations erupted over immigration raids present there. Lots of things, lots of implications of that decision, as they were implications of the decision coming out of Boston with respect to Harvard, implications for what the president does next, not only in terms of appellate review, but also next decisions about where to go, if to go, into other major decisions, the cities around the nation, making this decision once again in a way that is inconsistent with what our history has been in this area, defining again domestic law enforcement as providing service and support, keeping us safe and secure. When I was in Iraq, saw the implications of military presence, again, in the middle of a war. That's when a military is appropriately present, but also trying to establish calm and secure neighborhoods and circumstances. It is a difficult mix to do at best. They have very different missions. The military, important in times of war and times of true conflict, a different mission, different training, different operations, different instructions when it comes to domestic law enforcement. And that's the challenge. And that's what the federal courts are wrestling with these days. That should be what the president is also wrestling with in America as he thinks about going forward, as we know, also a presence in Washington, D.C. as well. Again, we appreciate so very much in the Maggie Dawn Show comments and questions, inquiries from our listeners. And Mark calling in from Prairie du Sac. Mark, glad to have you a part of our discussion this afternoon.
Yeah, this is segueing on, what you're talking about right now. I think there's some parallels between the intolerable acts, also known as coercive acts, of King George III. I'd say the Boston Port Act. I mean, because that was limits on trade. I think that the whole tariffs that Donald Trump has instituted, the Massachusetts Government Act, which, the King George was replacing, local officials with his own appointees, his own viceroys, which Trump has tried to do. Administration of Justice Act, and there's a direct parallel here, I would say, is that Trump is transporting people beyond the district where they were actually arrested to other points where he has more friendly, jurisdictions there. And also the Quartering Act, which I think is deploying the troops, and who knows where those troops are going to be quartered at some point in the future, that when you send in the National Guard, particularly from the former Confederate states into, say, Chicago, it is coming up. And maybe it's not a direct parallel, but I think the coercive acts, and that Trump is trying to impose his will on the American people and on American civilian governments.
Lots and lots of statutory enactments. You underscore that point, Mark. The notion that we have a legislature that not only follows the Constitution, but also issues not only proclamations and resolutions, but also makes the laws and also prescribes the ways in which the Constitution is to be observed by our president, by law enforcement, by all the members of the cabinet, by all of us, candidly, out there. Mark, you've identified a number of different ways in which the legislature goes forward and gives some breath and some life to our Constitution. We have today, again, a judge in California saying that the president does not have the authority to basically mix, if you will, domestic law enforcement with military forces. Bad consequences of this, called the Posse Comitatus Law, passed way back in the middle part of the 19th century, that basically prohibits this kind of thing. Legislation, in addition to the other kinds of bills and laws and enactments that you've just described, Mark, that prescribe the manners in which we conduct business in America. That includes law enforcement. That includes the waging of war overseas. All kinds of things that give us, again, predominant theme of our discussion this afternoon, restrictions on the capacity of all of us to engage in life and liberty here in America. All of that a part of our discussion. When we come back in the last portion of our broadcast here, we're going to be joined by Kristen Hansen, who's the executive director of Blue Sky Waukesha, talking with us all about civics once again, the rule of law and justice in America, that coming up as the Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel. I'm sitting in for Maggie this afternoon, and this is the final segments of our afternoon discussion. Delighted and honored to have with me and with Jacob and all of our listeners today a special guest, and her name is Kristen Hansen, and she is the executive director of Blue Sky Waukesha. Delighted to have Kristen talk with us about what Blue Sky Waukesha is all about, its civics commitment, the things that it does in our community to promote responsible citizenship. Kristen is the executive director. She's also the founder of the organization way back in 2019. And the focus of the organization is to inform and educate and empower the citizenship of not just Waukesha, but the larger area residents as well, to share accurate information about things like voting and elections and offer programs on things like civics and topics that voters should know about as they go and make informed choices about who they're sending into various positions of responsibility. Kristen Hansen, thank you so much, my friend, my colleague. Delighted to have you with me this afternoon on the Maggie Dawn Show.
Always good to see you, Jim.
I should say at the outset that as a part of that, again, in the context of not so much confessions, but things I'm very proud of is that Kristen has invited me on a routine basis to be a part of those programs, those civic programs. We recently completed, Kristen, a civics course. I do some other things as a part of the mission of Blue Sky. Let me ask you about the formation. Why put this organization together? Tell me more. Tell our listeners more about the mission of this wonderful organization.
I've always been one of those people that I've been, you know, more connected with politics and elections than many of my friends and family are, most of my friends and family. And so it, over the years, people have started asking me, who should I vote for? Just tell me who to vote for. Mm-hmm. I know there's all, especially the spring elections, right? So many names on the ballot,
right?
No party identification because they are nonpartisan elections.
And you know, Kristen, and, so oh, tell me who to vote for, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they would just say, and I would say, well, let me tell you about this person. Well, then they say, I don't care. But we share values. Just tell me who you are voting for. I'll vote for them. So this kind of evolved into me thinking, well, there's a reason why the turnout in spring elections is so low. It's because the voters do not know who these candidates are. And part of that is the cost of running a proper campaign. If you're just running for Genesee trustee in, you know, Waukesha County, are you going to try to raise or spend thousands or tens of thousands of dollars to run this little local campaign and have all of this material? Maybe not. But you have to do something to reach out to the voters and say who you are, why are you running, what are your values, what do you want for your municipality? And not enough people were doing that. So I formed this organization in part to say, I'm going to try to tell people who the candidates are, who I think shares our values as liberals, progressives, moderates, and also have a place for candidates to come and talk to our members. I think it makes a huge difference when someone says, I'm supporting this candidate, and I met them, and I talked to them, and I really trust them, and you know they seem to really know what they're talking about. It makes a difference. So bringing the candidates and the electorate together, letting people meet the candidates, and then also talking about the issues. I was talking to Tom Pasiewicz, who is sometimes fills in for Maggie and other shows on Civic Media. And when he was running for Congress, and he said, you know, I stand there at the doors and I want to talk about climate change, but I can't stand there and explain all of the science of climate change.
It's a little bit much, so, right? Right.
It's a little bit much for a doorstop conversation. So if we can educate people about all of these issues that our government is trying to do something about, hopefully, then maybe they're already informed, they're already educated. Now they can talk to the candidates from that perspective and really start to understand, okay, this person gets it. I think they can represent me and my community better than maybe somebody else. So it's all about all of that. And then you came into my life and we're doing all these civics classes. And I'm getting almost as dorky as you, maybe not as much, but
never quite as dorky, but close anyway, right?
But, you know, as you and I have found, there's so much about civics that people just either don't remember or they were never taught. And it's so important. So we're doing our little part over here to make that happen.
Very good. A strong public education. I know you've spoken about this a lot publicly and including here on Civic Media Station's Foundation of a Healthy Democracy, right? You say that an awful lot, right? That's the core of this. Just as an aside, this is a nonpartisan organization. Why is it important? Why is it important to be nonpartisan?
Because people do ask me, well, you know, can you say something different than what the Democratic Party says? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got nothing to do with them.
Right.
So, yeah, we are not an arm of the Democratic Party. We often, actually, especially in the spring elections, recommend candidates who call themselves conservatives. But they are, for a variety of reasons, the best candidate in the pool for that particular position. So so we need our independence. We do not take marching orders from any party.
Let's talk about Waukesha in particular. You have spent a lot of time, I know, Kristen Hansen, Executive Director of Blue Sky Waukesha, focusing upon what I'll call a changing Waukesha, not the same Waukesha as of even several years ago. Talk with us about the growth of the communities in Waukesha County, the changes demographically, again, even some of that political change that you have seen in the times that you have been the Executive Director and otherwise focusing on those things.
It's really amazing how much change there has been in just the last 6+ years. Waukesha as a city, people have to remember, there's a city of Waukesha and then there's Waukesha County. The city is not only the county seat, but it is an urban city. That city is now 50-50 Democrat, Republican, you know, voting. So when you talk about Waukesha County being this deep red county, it's not anymore. So the city of Waukesha, you know, in this past election, Susan Crawford won the city of Waukesha. John Kreidasiewicz won the city of Waukesha. I think Kamala Harris won the city of Waukesha, or pretty darn close. And Brookfield is becoming quite a good source for Democratic votes, or liberal, whatever word you want to use. That's changing. The city, the village of Elm Grove, going quite blue. Even New Berlin starting to go more blue. Menominee Falls going more blue. I think some of this is people changing their minds about some knee-jerk reaction voting they might have done in the past. There are some people that just always voted a certain way, and now they're giving more thought to it and maybe voting differently. But there's also people who come from an urban municipality. And now they're moving west. Maybe they're used, you know, and they're bringing their voting actions with them. So part of it's a demographic change. Part of it's just people voting differently. I like to think part of it is we're getting more information out there about the elections. And I know some of this is true because I get emails from people who say, I just this past spring, I got one email from a man who said, thank you so much for sending out these candidate recommendations. I always vote for who you recommend. Mm. I got another email from a gentleman who said, thank you for sending these out. I always vote for the opposite of what you said. Hey, either way, I'm helping people, right?
Right.
But we also have people who are starting to say, and I love this, can you tell us how you came to these conclusions?
Yes, right. What's the basis for doing this, right? Yeah.
For 4 years, 5 years, it was just tell us who to vote for. We share a set of values. Great. Now they're starting to say, well, why did you choose this person over that person? So we are going to be sharing more information about how we came to these conclusions. And hopefully that will help people do some critical thinking when they go to the polls. And not just look at the label the candidate is on.
Right. Let's talk about these nonpartisan offices, and including going into 2026, going to be an interesting and maybe challenging year for all of us in America, certainly in the state of Wisconsin. Talk about the nonpartisan offices and the goals that you have for, we should all have, for putting people in those positions, nonpartisan positions, people who will be decent in representing the constituencies well, balanced, all those kinds of good words. Views on the nonpartisan offices and why those are important.
This is something that we really need to do more work on, is explaining to the voters what the actual job description of this position is. And is the person who's running, or are the people who are running for that position, qualified to do the job? So in the city of Waukesha, was in the Waukesha Freeman, the Common Council voted by one vote to not change the city attorney position from an elected position to an appointed position. And the reason they were talking about that was because you can't have just anybody running for city attorney. This is someone who really needs to have a good legal background, the right kind of legal background. You know, do you want someone who's a family law attorney to suddenly become the city attorney for a city of 80,000 people, that's the county seat, with no experience in municipal law? That would be a challenge, right?
Absolutely. Now,
the current city attorney, Brian Running, did announce that he is going to run for re-election, which I think is great. Brian is an incredibly smart man who has so much integrity. I know him a little bit personally. He is just right down the middle, straight. What is the law? What are we supposed to follow? You, as Jim often says, the rule of law is what governs all of the decisions that he makes. What is the statute? What is the ordinance? We've got to make straight up decisions. He's great. But there's the other issue is like city clerks. We used to elect city clerks. More and more municipalities are changing that to an appointed position, because that clerk is often also the treasurer. You need someone who has a finance background, who can read the budgets, interpret the budgets, manage perhaps the money for the whole municipality. You can't have people who are running for partisan reasons. And now we see that with judicial races.
Yes. Right.
You were looking at these candidates and they get labeled from this party or this label or that label. No one is looking at what is the person's experience behind the bench.
Right.
Do they even have any? Mm-hmm. We, you know, we need to get back to real discussions of which one of these people will actually bring more experience, life experience and actual education and work experience.
Right. And as you say, and wedding that to what the actual duties of and the job responsibilities are, right? Right. And again, with respect to judges, we've talked about this a lot. The other positions you described as well, this notion that we say in nonpartisan elections, right? In Wisconsin, we are supposed to have nonpartisan judicial elections, labeling someone with an R or a D or another letter after their name, and not understanding that the great majority of circuit court judges around the state of Wisconsin and even appeals court judges, it's a correcting court. As you say, the Supreme Court may be a different animal, but those judges, they do an awful lot of ministerial work. It's very important. And when we come back, Kristen, I want to pursue that with you a little bit more, talk more about the mission, the goals of not only of the Blue Sky Waukesha, but your vision for what we should be doing in the future. 2026, a big year coming up. Stay with us for that discussion with Kristen Hansen, the Executive Director of Blue Sky Waukesha, right here on The Maggie Dawn Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
My name is Jim Santel. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. The last segment of our tour, our program, delighted to spend these last minutes with a friend and colleague of mine. It should be yours as well. She is yours as well when it comes to education and voter responsibility, elections, informed choices, all those kinds of good things. She is the executive director of Blue Sky Waukesha. Delighted, honored to have Kristen Hansen with us once again for these last few minutes in our afternoon program. Kristen, Kristen, tell us about 2026. What a question to ask, right? Oh, with 8 minutes left. Yeah. It's going to be quite a year, right? What are your perspectives on what we should anticipate? What kinds of things should be on the agenda if somebody's focused on those good kinds of electoral issues in voting?
Some interesting stuff happening, obviously statewide and nationwide, but in Waukesha County, we have a race for Brookfield mayor. One of the aldermen, Mike Hallquist, is running for mayor. I do not know if the current mayor is going to run. I don't think maybe he is. We also have a mayoral race in the city of Waukesha. There is one person who has declared for that, Scott Allen, who's currently an assembly representative Republican. But I think we're going to see more people jumping into that race. So that's going to be really interesting. We have, of course, the Supreme Court race. Mm-hmm. And again, it's going to be a Waukesha County connection. If Maria Lazar, who was a circuit court judge in Waukesha County and is now on the Court of Appeals, if she follows up with what she mentioned in a news article recently and decides to run for Supreme Court against Chris Taylor, who is an appeals court judge in Dane County, that's going to set up another race with Waukesha in it. And then, of course, in the fall, Sarah Rodriguez, who is our current lieutenant governor, who lives in the city of Waukesha now, she used to live in Brookfield, she is running for governor. So there's going to be just a lot of stuff going on around here. You know, in addition to all the usual assembly, we have a Senate race in the fall. Senate District 5 is going to be up, as are all the odd-numbered state Senate districts. We will have a Democratic primary in that race, in addition to the general race in the fall. And the old school board, we're always trying to figure out how to add some fairness and balance to our school board elections. So stay tuned, and please, everybody, pay attention to what's happening in your communities, because these are really important. Local elections are the ones that affect your life the most, but the fewest people pay attention to. We really need to flip that. And the spring elections deserve just as much as your time and attention as the fall elections do.
And Waukesha, key to much of this, yeah. Right? Waukesha, maybe not the center of the universe, but pretty darn close. Pretty darn close.
The joke, right? Crucial, right? Waukesha, right? County, but it is true. Because Waukesha County supplies the third largest number of Democratic votes in the state. So it goes Milwaukee County, Dane County, Waukesha County, because of our size. There's 450,000 people in there. So you cannot discount the power of Waukesha County voters. I hope that they all use that power for good. But one of the things that that we don't do well is school board elections. So even though the city of Waukesha, which makes up most of the Waukesha school district, is 50-50, if we must divide, you know, blue-red, not 8 out of the 9 school board members are very far right-wing conservatives. So that is not balanced. It does not actually represent the district. So we do need some more moderate there. We need some kind of a balance so that we don't have kind of a cabal that can, you know, force all of the issues in that school board race. All of the school boards really need to have a more variety of voices than they do right now. So we'll be trying to do some education around that. The other thing that people can do is just go to our website, blueskywaukesha.org. It actually does cover the whole county. And on there, you can find your elected representatives. You can see what their voting records are. You can go to our library and see some of the books that we recommend and buy books there. You can sign up for our newsletter, which is when we announce the events we're going to do. Like, we have a member meeting coming up on Monday where we're going to do something that you recommended, Jim, and everyone listening can do this. Some of these judges who are making really hard decisions to be guardrails against authoritarianism need a little pat on the back. They're not going to call you back, or they're not going to, you know, mail you a letter back. But send them a thank you note.
And we
send a little note to say, we just think it's great that you are being a guardrail for our democracy. Thank you for taking this case seriously. And some of the senators and representatives on either side of the aisle who are standing up to authoritarianism, give them a little pat on the back.
Right. And part of your civics commitment, informed choices, and also telling those folks in all those different positions, perspectives. And I've always said, and you and I discussed this a lot, when you get a letter and it has got a stamp on it, it's an envelope, and you open it up, and maybe it's written by Jim Santel or Kristen Hansen or anyone out there. I believe that most elected and appointed representatives in our government systems, they at least read it. And it's important to let people know that's a part of the commitment you have going forward. If people want to get more involved with you and with Blue Sky, again, you mentioned already the website, many programs, 2026. But even before then, what should they be doing today, tomorrow, in the next few months or so? What kinds of things can you do to engage with you?
We are, like I said, we have monthly member meetings. Those are social as well as informative. Excuse me, allergies. But we also are doing, Arvina Martin from Emerge is going to join us at the end of the month on a Zoom call that anyone could join about what you might think about if you're going to run for office.
Wonderful. Good, good.
And then we're going to do some food raising for the food pantry.
Outstanding. Lots of good civic responsibilities there. That is Kristen Hansen. She is the executive director of Blue Sky Waukesha. Kristen, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. Good work going forward and lots of things coming up in the next calendar year, the next months just ahead. This has been the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel. Thanks everybody for joining us this afternoon. Stay with us here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.